I think it's the most common mistake for anyone who like starts selling either services or products on the internet is like you start to get some traction and then you're immediately like, it should be a different idea. It's like, no, you should just obsess over all the boring components of what you're doing and it'll probably double or triple from here.
Based on what I've learned in the past of how to work while traveling, if you try to stick to the same big schedule, you end up going to zero rather than, okay, I'm actually just going to reduce the scope by 50%, but really intentionally do that 50%.
Luxury goods in pretty much any industry can teach you so much about all of the little things. Like, how can you make it where the customer is like thanking you for asking something of you because you've done it in such an over-the-top way where they're like, I'm impressed.
We eat our own dog food when we talk about this. Any new business we start, we can reapply that same thinking and we'll be able to do it much faster, much more efficiently. You could say, is this the exact perfect business? We think it is, but even if it wasn't, how can you build the skill that then you can reapply to all of the other businesses that you do in the future? Boom. Welcome back to another episode of The Espresso Hour, coming to you remotely for the first time in, it's been a while since we haven't recorded from the shipyard. It's taken me back a little bit to have this Riverside
throwback
browser, but we're here. I'm coming to you from Medellin, Colombia, where I'm here for the second week because took a little trip after Cole's wedding. Cole, congrats, officially tied the knot. How does it feel?
That's right. Everyone keeps asking me how it feels, and I feel bad saying this answer, but I'm like, I just feel relief. I feel relief that it's over. I feel relief that I'm done, you know, planning a wedding is like having a part-time job. It's like 30 hours a week. It was amazing, but I'm just so happy that all of that logistical planning is over.
Yeah, it was fun. One of the funnier moments was 11 p.m., maybe 12 on wedding night, where we were just like dancing around, everyone just partying, and I kind of dapped you up, just gave you a hug, and you're like, this is amazing, and I can't wait to get back to take over the game. And it was like all we needed to say of this, let's soak this in and then get back to hitting the ground running. And here we are. We're back, ready to go.
We're back. And I love the feeling of stepping away and then coming back and just like 0 to 100 right back to work. Mm. It's like the best feeling on earth to me.
That's when you know you've taken enough time doing something else. Is you cannot stand another second of not being fully back dialed in on it.
Yeah.
Like that's how you know a vacation or just time off in general has served its role. I feel that on the micro level. Like I know I've taken enough time in the afternoon of not working where I'm just counting down the minutes to going to bed so I can wake up and work again on the next thing. Mm-hmm. And it's cool to hit the ground running on stuff we knew we were going to do. And so there was no replanning, no re-engineering. It was like we had the plan. The plan had a couple week break and then right back into it. Nothing changes. No need to go. And we've probably done that in the past of like scrambling. What do we do? How do we do this? But given the roadmap we have right now, it's so, just simple and clean and we know exactly what to do.
We have a very simple year ahead of us. This is definitely the simplest I think it's been on our journey, you know, because it's really not a lot of creating. There's some new things, but it's really not creating new things. It's just improving existing things, you know.
Yeah, we talked about that in the last one. So let's talk about a couple things. I have one story from a restaurant I went to in Medellin, and then we want to talk a little bit about working styles while traveling, looking forward ahead on the year, how we look at routines when we're fully dialed in on something versus when we're less dialed in, like a maintenance mode, monk mode style kind of thing. But so I went to this restaurant called Idilico 2 days ago, and it's a Michelin star, 7-course, just unbelievable experience and way different than some of the others that I went to one last night called El Cielo. And it's like a scene there. There's like a lot of commotion. There's like fire, all this stuff. But this had like one of the most calm, zen, like back VIP rooms. The waiter was like the most calming person I've ever spoken with. You know how a waiter does a really good job when they like put the dish down and it's silent? Like he just, I don't know, he had this technique to just put it down. I was like, this is amazing when he's replacing silverware. Anyway, amazing meal. And after dessert, so brings out this dessert. There are two desserts, one that's like the fruity one and then one that's like rich chocolate. I'm sitting there talking to my girlfriend and I'm just saying, this was such an unbelievable meal. Like, I can't wait to recommend this place to a ton of people. And I feel that way after a lot of meals. Like, this was amazing. I'm going to send friends here. I want to leave a review. But I have never once, I don't know if you have, left a Google review on somewhere. Have you ever left a Google review ever? And I always think like, oh yeah, I can't wait to like, oh, maybe we'll review it sometime. So after dessert, the both owner and waiter come over and they're like, how was your meal? Could you tell us about this dish that we're testing? How'd you feel about this? Where could we have done? Like, they asked me two or three questions. I was like, first off, this was amazing. Thanks for coming over. Like, they brought us this candle that you blew out and then had like a little wax and you dip your hand in it and it's like a hand moisturizer smell thing. And they do it to remind you, they like pair the scent with, they're like, oh, we want you to think about this restaurant whenever you smell this like pineapple coconut. I was like, wow, that's really cool. But then what they did was extremely unique. We just hyped up the restaurant. I said I was going to tell all my friends all this. And he goes, great, thanks for sharing that. Would you mind taking a minute to leave us a Google review? And he brought out this small, like cardboard, or not cardboard, like nice wooden plaque with a QR code. And it said, would you please leave a review? And right then, I took my phone, scanned the QR. It immediately pre-populated the Google form, right with like two or three answers of something I'd already said. So they probably had multiple of the QR codes of like, I enjoyed this part, I enjoyed this thing. And it went right to the page, so I didn't have to manually do anything. And I left the review, 5 stars, and then it forwarded me to their full review page, and it's like 800 five-star reviews with 0 negative ratings. And it was the first time I'd ever left a Google review, and I was like, wow, why did I just do that? And how could we apply it to our business? So I zoomed out for a second, and like, as the waiter walked away, I'm like taking out my phone, jotting down this idea, like outlining this full thing across the table. I'm like, just give me 2 minutes. I need to write this down. And I wrote up the piece yesterday. And what did they do right? Well, first, why don't I ever fill out Google reviews? One, it's a ton of friction. It's always like, I got to go find the restaurant on Google Maps, and then I gotta like log in, I gotta do all these things, they ask me too many questions, it's not clear, and like I don't know what to say. So a ton of friction. And then second, the time at which they ask, they either don't ask, or they ask in like an email when I get home, and it's been a bunch of hours since I thought about it, and like life's gotten in the way, whatever. So to reverse that, when you're asking for testimonial, first ask immediately after the peak experience that a customer might have. So I just finished dessert. I'm in this amazing mood. Like, I couldn't feel any better about this restaurant. I'm full. I'm like, I got a nice little sugar high. And then they ask for the review, where I'm of course I'm more likely to leave it. And then they present this perfect plaque that pre-populates it. I was done with it in under 30 seconds. And then I left the review, and you could tell it's working because they have so many 5 stars. So that was one little story of how I'm trying to just go through life looking for little frameworks. And I think the nice restaurant industry is a tremendous industry to
study.
Amazing
example.
Because you can apply it to your business of how to just make customers feel good. And everyone, I'm reading Unreasonable Hospitality by Danny Meyer, same idea. And so seeing that, I'm like, okay, cool. I'm going to apply that exact same thing to the way we ask for testimonials. So how can we reduce the friction, and how can we ask only after like a peak event in terms of value, perceived value of the product?
I think we were talking about this a little bit in Colombia during my wedding too, but you have to watch the show The Bear, because it's all about this, you know, chef who's essentially Michelin trained, but he's like trying to start his own restaurant, and he's like instilling all of these mentalities and practices. And it's such a, I love, like, luxury goods in pretty much any industry can teach you so much about all of the little things. Like, my suit for my wedding was a custom tailored Giorgio Armani suit. The experience of getting that suit gave me so many ideas for like little things that you could add to a business. High grade restaurants are that way. Really great like car companies. Like, every time I take my BMW in, I am amazed at just the way that they engineer the whole process, and like they have it taken care of and everything's tracked and they know who you are and they address you by name. And like, I think the top tier of any industry shows you how far you can push that lever. We've been calling it unreasonable accountability.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, how can you make it so much to the point where the customer is like thanking you for asking something of you because you've done it in such an over the top way where they're like, I'm not even annoyed, I'm impressed that you went to this length.
We've been seeing that with some of our emails to people who have fallen off, who are, there's two responses you could expect. One is like, leave me alone, you're messaging me too much, but people are making a big investment in PGA, so we're going above and beyond. Almost every one of them is an apology. Like, I'm sorry I have dropped the ball here. Thank you for continuing to reach out to me, calling me, messaging me on all platforms. Like, there is such a higher level that we can push. And that is the, you hit the nail on the head. It's when you see the difference between like elite, top tier service and just really good service, you're like, oh, because you felt this at the spot in the Keys, right? Similar idea.
Yeah,
right?
That was at the end of our wedding. Yeah, me and my wife, it's fun to say now, we went to down to the Keys, but we went to this hotel that it's not on the Keys. You have to take a little boat from the Keys. You have like park your car, you get in a little boat, and then they take you to a private island. And this little hotel is on this private island. It's the only thing on this island, and only like 30 people can stay there at a time. And the service was so next level. Yeah, the thing I was telling you was like such a small thing, but I only had to tell them my room number once. And then the whole rest of the trip, they didn't ask me for it again. They didn't make me sign anything. I could get up and leave dinner, breakfast, lunch, whenever I wanted. They just knew, oh, Cole's staying in room, you know, whatever, 15. And every meal, everything I order, there's zero friction. They're just like, we're going to attribute it to your room. Which is so different than like if you go to an all-inclusive hotel in Cabo, right? Where like you're like, oh, I want a bottle of water. They're like, okay, we got to ring that up. Wait, I need you to sign this receipt. Sign your room number. Like you notice there's such a different experience in just that small decision.
So much goes into that. And it's, you don't recognize it till you feel it or see it. That's the beautiful part about amazing service is you couldn't describe that being more efficient until you experience it. You're like, oh yeah, it is kind of annoying to do that all the time. Like to sign things when, you know, like what is the actual point of this? Do I need to be doing this? How could this be better? Just another quick one, like Starbucks in Medellin face a lot of competition from like local coffee shops. And it's not like in the US where Starbucks is like the place where most people get their coffee. So what they do in Medellin is they write compliments on your Starbucks cup for every customer, like your eyes are pretty, or your teeth look nice, or your outfit is great. The only reason they do that, well, I mean, yeah, it makes you feel good, but it's really to incentivize sharing on social platforms, right? So again, my next little idea is how could we build something in that encourages more people to share on social that they're a part of our programs? We already do this nicely with Ship 30, but same idea. How could you create a personalized something that no one else does that contributes to shareability, referral, that build until they tell mentality that we've been talking about over the last month.
I love that. That's really similar to, I remember this became a huge trend. My first job out of college when Instagram first started to get popular, this ad agency I worked with, like a third of our clients were all restaurants. And so I got to understand the restaurant business and marketing for restaurants. And one of like the go-to investments that every restaurant realized is we need an Instagram wall. So they would create a wall of the restaurant that either had super funky wallpaper or a really bold color or had some like catchy saying on it. And then every person would want to take a picture in front of that wall. And so I always ask myself that question of like, what can be our version of an Instagram wall that every person wants? Like at my wedding, remember at the in the back where you had that wall with like the flowers on it? I think every couple there took a picture in front of
me. Oh, I took about 40.
Yeah, exactly.
On so multiple like, angles with multiple cameras.
So like what for every product we build, like what is our Instagram wall?
that's what I love about having this lens of Twitter long form right now, is I'm just trying to find these moments in everyday things. Like, how could I apply it to our business? Talk about it here, make a short on it. Like, I filmed a little walking head video right after it. Just, hey, this just happened. Here's what I'm thinking about applying it to our business. So it's been fun.
Yep.
Like, creation cadence with a short form video has been a new one that the pressure is lower than writing. It only takes a few bullets and I just go. And then I can do two or three of them and kind of get a better flow on it.
I think the two things Hormozy has done really well is, one, your point of, you know, any topic, you're not going to make that video once, you're going to make it three times or multiple times, you know, which removes the pressure, but also just makes you play the long game and realize you can iterate. But also just observing his ability to take a topic, talk about it on a podcast, refine it, you know, do it in a presentation, refine it, and then ultimately like put it in a book, like in its most refined form. And I'm really fascinated by that idea right now of, it's like you write about it, but then you stress test it in a different way when you have to say it in short form. And then you stress test it in a different way when you say it in long form, and then in a different way on a podcast. Like, there's so many, it's our whole lean writing methodology, just all these different opportunities to refine a single idea.
And I'm feeling that with my current long form writing. I'm writing it and then making a video on it and then editing it after I make the video, or I outline it, I film the video, I feel that that's a better outline, and then I use that for the long form, which has been nice, because it's, you're getting multiple reps, and then you could talk about it. Like that Medellin post I just talked about, I wrote yesterday, so why was I able to kind of rattle that story off relatively clearly? Because I wrote pretty much everything I just said. And that,
exactly,
you sound so much crisper on podcast and video when you've written it, but you're not reading it, you've just internalized it. That's the key. And I think for a long time I would write something and then try to read it, or like read it in my head, but no, it's like you just better understand the actual thing you're trying to say, and then you sound better because of that.
Completely. Yeah, it's not just like logically understanding it, but like the word, you know what the word Grok means? It's also the name of the Twitter AI
platform. Yeah, what's it mean?
Grok, but Grok is like to know something deeply, like to have integrated it into yourself. And I think a lot of times people think of knowledge as like, yeah, you understand it logically, but you haven't fully Grokked it. And you can tell, like when someone gets on a podcast, you're like, I know that you're speaking from a place of, you've been in the trenches and you've lived this for a long time, versus someone who's like, I'm going to articulate it and I kind of understand it, but I haven't fully grokked it yet.
For sure. That's you on the Holly Abdal podcast. That's like everyone's response. It's like, this guy, it's not, you're not parroting. Like, you haven't heard this from somewhere else. You've done every single thing you're saying right now.
And the energy you can feel from that person you're just talking. Yeah, it's totally different.
Okay, so I'm here for the next 2 weeks. I love it here. I definitely see myself spending more time here, just because it's not even I like the place. I like this building an unreasonable amount. Like, I sent you the video of the proximity of the gym to the door, to the hot tub, to everything. And the fact that there's as many restaurants as you could imagine within walking distance. I was making a list with my girlfriend of all the restaurants we've been. And of the 30 or so, 35 across like here, Miami, New York, Munich, the places we've gone, 4 out of the top 5 already were the 4 that we've been to here. Like, unbelievable.
And wow.
I it's not even like I'm trying to hype it up, but every single time I'm blown away by the quality of the food, the staff, everything. And then you get the bill and it's like, oh my goodness, I can't believe that this is not 4 times as much, which is like a further reinforcement of how cool it is. But a big part of this trip was working during it, especially the Monday through Thursday. So I'll give a little bit of a framework that I'm approaching these 2 weeks with, based on what I've learned in the past of how to work while traveling. And I think where I've made some mistakes in the past with this is trying to, one, stick to the same schedule that I do in Miami, which is 5 a.m. waking up, working basically the entire day until 5, going to the gym, coming back, closing loops, and shutting the day down. And then doing that Monday to basically Sunday, where the weekend, if I don't have anything, I just do the same thing I do during the week, but I don't have anyone to like call or anything. Here, I'm setting some intentional constraints, both with the time of day that I'm working and the number of days. And ironically, I'm getting a lot done in that time, and it's helping me understand like where am I being inefficient back in Miami. But that constraint for me is not working Friday, Saturday, Sunday, pretty much. So still giving, because what happens is if you try to stick to the same big schedule and you can't do it, you end up going to zero. And I think that's like a general habit change thing, is like if you can't stick to what you were doing, people just give it up entirely.
Yep.
Rather than, okay, I'm actually just going to reduce the scope by 50%, but really intentionally do that 50%. So what that's meant for us is it's nice here because the sun rises at 6, like high in the sky at 6. So I'm getting up at 6:30, doing a light workout, sitting down at like doing a light workout, stretch, hydrate, sitting down at a coffee shop at 8 and saying, I'm working for 4 hours, like 8 to 12. What am I going to do with that time? It makes you realize that a lot of the calls that I have on the calendar, what I've been doing is trying to run them async and moving them past noon. So that 4 hours I've been spending writing, strategizing, thinking, and from 8 to 12, I know, okay, I'm going to get the most important thing right now, which is just continued content creation, because that's what's driving a lot of the new marketing. And if I get that done every day, plus whatever admin meetings, then I can eat lunch at 12, spend an extra hour working on any kind of admin, any one-off meetings, closing the loop on stuff, and then working out at 2 and saying, I'm not working after that. And condensing that down into, I know I'm going to get 4 hours of quality work done on 4 consecutive days, and then take the fact that I'm not going to get as much work done on the weekend for like at face value. Just that's okay. And ironically, I think we'll still get as much done when you force that level of constraint on yourself. And that's what I've been feeling the last 4 days, is like I've been in a great writing flow, still getting the meetings, but you do have to make the choice of what am I going to spend those 4 hours on when you don't have the full day. And on Monday and today, it was 4 hours of meetings. But Tuesday, Wednesday, I took all the meetings off. And so that's kind of the next little thing, is like, don't try to work for an hour and then have a meeting and then try to work for another hour. It's like you get 4, stack all the meetings then, or stack none of the meetings and do as much deep work as you can. So that's kind of my framework right now.
Yeah, I think the work fills the container, you know, and however much time or space you give yourself. Something though that, and I think we've been learning this pretty intuitively, but it's worth making more and more conscious, is I think when you change the space or wherever you're working or the constraint, how much or how long you work, I think you sort of naturally, you, me, anyone, I think you sort of naturally pick different things to work on that fit within that space. So like, for example, since you're in a different place and outside of your normal routine, I think it actually makes a lot of sense to gravitate toward things like content or calls, because those things are, they don't require as much immersion. Whereas a month ago or a couple weeks ago, when you were overhauling the whole like accountability Airtable supply chain of PGA, like you were living in Airtable for like 8 hours a day for 3 weeks in a row. And I think if you had tried to do that type of work where you are now, it would have been very, very hard.
Basically, you know? Impossible.
Yeah. No, and I see it too. Like whenever I'm traveling, or if we're inverted, you know, and like I'm doing what you're doing now, it's really hard for me to make meaningful progress on like a curriculum, for example. Whereas like right now, I just got back from my wedding. I'm back in my like proven routine. And the past 2 days, I've basically written for like 8 straight hours both days, and from the moment I woke up, aside from going to the gym and eating dinner, I worked until like 10 p.m. And like, I can do that because I'm in the right space for that.
And it, yeah, those are basically me on infrastructure and operational and you on curriculum. It's like, we need immersion for that. And then
yeah,
content.
Yeah, you have to.
Yeah, because content still fits in when we don't spend all day on those two things, right? We can still do that early in the morning and then spend the full day. Yeah, that makes sense, and a good crystallization there.
And even just saying that out loud, like, I'm going to go like out to Arizona in a couple weeks to look at houses. Like, I should just mentally register for myself from now until then, great time period to make as much progress as possible on the curriculum side. But like, that week I'm there would be a great week for me to pivot to how can I create new content as marketing, for example.
Short form video scripts or long form video scripts
exactly.
Or things like that.
Because it's not as like, it doesn't require as much immersion, but it's still productive and beneficial for the business. It's just a different thing.
Right. How can you allocate, given your constraints, the highest leverage work?
Which I think is, like, that as a framework is really important, because otherwise what happens is you're like, I need to, or I'm going to travel, but I still feel like I need to make progress on this curriculum. And you try and force something into a container that like isn't built for that. And then what ends up happening is you get the worst of both worlds. You don't make as much progress on the business component, and you almost like beat yourself up about it while you're traveling, which then means you're not able to enjoy the travel. So it's like understanding, I think, what is the highest leverage thing that fits within the right container for that period of time. It's just a week, or it's just 2 weeks. Like, it's not forever, you know?
And I can feel that as I'm mapping out next week, right? It's high, like my best usage of time is still on content, getting ahead on that. So when I get back, I can dive back into likely the Ship30 async full infrastructure there. And what's nice is I don't have any travel for 2 months after that. And so I can really intentionally design. I'm like, I'm going to be there. And then the summer, I'm going to be traveling a lot. And that will, again, take new thinking of like, how do I engineer my day when I'm 6 hours ahead, which I'll be able to do deep work in the morning, probably sleep in a little bit, might have to stay up later. Like, these are all just part of the game of how do you craft that schedule in the right way. And we're getting better at it. I think for a long time, that was a weak suit of mine. It's like, I have to do the same things no matter where I am and work on the same things at all times. Because there's no perfect answer, but getting closer. And it excites me to get back to those things when you take a break from them. Like, I'm excited to get back in Airtable. Like, I have a giant monitor that I can set up three things, bang, 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 that I can't do on my laptop. And so I'm just less efficient. So it doesn't even make sense to really do it.
Yeah, I think we're definitely getting better at it. It's kind of clear, like, this year, you know, the next 2.5 months are great, like, deep work, sort of overhaul the piping of a lot of things in our business. But then it might, you know, between your travels and I'm moving this summer, like, this might just be a content summer, you know, and just put it all top of funnel. We fixed a lot of the underlying things that we wanted to change. And then after summer, when we settle back into a new period, we're like, okay, what's the next thing we want to build, you know?
I think that's exactly what's going to happen. It's like maintenance of all the stuff we're fixing right now, because every single thing on that list, like, of I sent you goals or main projects for the next 12 weeks until I go to Spain, which is May 15th. So it's like a little over 2.5 months. Almost every one of them says upgrade in some way. It's like upgrade EEC videos, upgrade landing page, upgrade blank, because we have the entire business mapped out on one formula right now. And I've never felt more like orchestrative in terms of change nothing except that one number. What are the 10 ways we could improve that one number? What's the easiest way to do it? Go start to execute on that list.
Yep.
And we've had that same list for a while, and we get to start on it Monday when I get back on those upgraded videos, which feels great.
It does feel really great.
It took us a year to have that formula. So this, like, we eat our own dog food when we talk about this, because it took us a year to come up with that formula and to understand it clearly. Now we're going to be able to improve each bottleneck within that on both the front end and the back end. And then any new business we start, we can reapply that same thinking of how do we productize and formalize this exact business, and we'll be able to do it much faster, much more efficiently for everything we do in the future, right? Yep. So we took what we had, like you could say, is this the exact perfect business? We think it is, but even if it wasn't, how can you build the skill that then you can reapply to all of the other businesses that you do in the future? And I feel great about that. The second we spin up the Async Ship 30, it's like same idea of full landing page click to close, build that entire thing out, and then hone in with a laser beam on the one that is lowest and easiest to improve to like some kind of standard. Do that, change nothing else. That's basically what business becomes, which is very freeing to me, like intellectually satisfying.
I think it was 2 espresso hours ago when we were talking about just you have to fall in love with the monotony of it and just the boringness of it. And like 2 days ago when I got back, I did a just little journal sesh of like, okay, that loop's closed, we're back, like refocus. And it's just so funny how we are at such that point in the journey when it is so easy to get bored and like go focus on something else that's more mentally stimulating. But if all we do is just improve the existing things, the business grows. And like I just want to double click on that because I think that's a mistake I certainly made for many years, but I think it's the most common mistake for anyone who like starts selling either services or products on the internet. Is like you start to get some traction and then you're immediately like, it should be a different idea. It's like, no, you should just obsess over all the boring components of what you're doing and it'll probably double or triple from here.
I think I said this one on the last espresso hour, the giant money tree, how to stop trying to climb to the top.
It's a great metaphor. And then I wrote
that up. Same idea. It's like there's thousands of fruit and just pick one number to improve. That's the tree that you're choosing to pick from. Stop climbing all the way up and just pick everything at eye level first. And that's what we're going to do. And it feels like we're going to be sitting here in 3 months. On the outside, the business will look exactly the same, but all the internal metrics from someone going to the landing page to ending up in the programs are going to be improved from incremental small things. Like Hormuzzi's got a good one on, it's not one giant bullet, it's like 1,000 golden BBs that improve a business. And it's like, okay, if we're going to take our 5-day email course that is currently getting this many people to fill out an application and we want that number to go up, all we have to do is add a video to each one. And that's our hypothesis. It's like, if you make a video, more people will engage with it. More people will get to the end. You add a CTA, more people fill out the app. That number goes up. Entire business improves just on that. And quantifiably improves by this much if we do it. So I'm a fan of this way of thinking and putting it all together. So it's been fun.
I am too. And I think the thing I'm most excited about this year is it's been such a like, I want it all to happen faster, you know, but it's been such a slow process of understanding how we're going to unlock video, what it means to really build YouTube as like its own channel. And I'm starting to see those little signals that like, it's starting to click, we're starting to build the supply chain, like we're understanding like the ways that we can double or triple dip with these assets. I am just so excited to see where we are at the end of the year.
Yeah.
Once that's like dialed in and we have a bunch of videos out and our funnels are improved, and like it is going to be such an exciting time.
Can't wait. And we get to rewatch this in the future when we do the end of year highlight clip recap. We'll put this one in there. Where are we? Who knows?
Who knows?
Who knows? Well, congratulations. Glad to have you back. Last time we put marriage as the word for people to leave a comment on. So what word do we need to do to identify that you've watched it this far?
I think it should be Medellin, and it has to be spelled correctly.
Ah, okay. Medellin.
That's a hard one.
There you go. This has been a low-key one because in the past we've been recapping what happened in the business, but like the last week and a half, not much has happened, and that's okay, right? Mm-hmm. We didn't do one last week. We're back cranking, and it was interesting for me to put that. I've been writing up like the what happened, and I skipped it last week because I just was like, the business stayed the exact same, and that is okay. for 1 week. That's all we got. Thanks everyone for watching. If you're on YouTube, hit like, hit comment, leave a comment with Medellin for an entry into the next Ship 30 cohort or whatever we end up doing with enrollment in the next Ship 30. If you're on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, subscribe, take a screenshot, tag us on Instagram, forward this episode to a friend. Thanks everyone for watching, enjoying being along the journey as we build this education empire throughout the year.
Empire.
That's all we got. Have a good one, y'all. Talk soon.
See ya.
Peace.